Welcome to Farmer Talk Radio. This podcast focuses on measuring the value of DCTs and hybrid models from the 2023 DFARM Disruptive Innovations to Modernize Clinical Research Conference. For more information on the DFARM Conference, editorial, podcasts, or webcasts, visit dfarmconference.com or theconferenceforum.org. Thank you and enjoy the podcast.
Okay. Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us here today during this session. Today we're going to be discussing measuring the value of DCTs and hybrid models. I have a number of esteemed colleagues up on the stage with me here today. We really have an exciting organic discussion. It's not going to be the moderating panel that you're accustomed to. We really like to have just a conversation among us. So to set the stage, I'd like to just point out the fact that right now, as an industry, we've been hearing that data underpins much of the decision-making that goes on across sponsors within the industry, and that data is not yet in a robust state where leaders and organizations are able to make informed decisions about how to go about implementing a hybrid or a DCT modality into their trials. So with that said, we really want to start to focus on what are the key metrics to consider when making a decision around implementation. What do you need to look at? Is it hard savings, soft savings? Much of us have benchmarks that we can reference. And also looking at what are our obligations around increasing a diverse patient population into our studies. So with that said, I'd like to kick off the conversation. I'm going to hand over to Ken with the first question or topic of discussion, and that's really, what are you looking at from Tufts, Ken, in order to determine the most prioritized metrics to determine success within a decentralized modality?
It's a great way to just get us into this conversation, and I'll just echo what you said, that metrics are really the language that motivates us as a community. So many of us are really grounded in the sciences or in some analytical, data analytical area, and so metrics are so key. In the absence of data in our industry, and actually I think yesterday you even heard during the change management discussion about what happens when you only have aspirational data and anecdotal information, we typically start with data that we think might motivate senior management. So many of you may be familiar with a very early study that we did just looking at the impact that DCT elements have on program value. This was the expected net present value assessment. And it was purely financial information, but that seems to resonate, especially at the C-suite level and the executive level. Now what we're trying to get at is exactly what you described, is are there performance outcome measures, empirical evidence that has been gathered appropriately that we can begin to compare in more of a benchmark way so that we can motivate decision makers really at the clinical trial design and execution level. And I think as a group we'll talk more about that, but we're sort of moving underneath the program level impact and now trying to get at clinical trial specific performance and cost and quality outcomes.
If I can just follow up real quick with you, Ken. So we're looking at it from a financial ROI perspective. What are we seeing from early data points that would lead us to have more informed discussions with leadership around the value that they could see, either in cycle time reduction or reduction of substantial amendments? Tell me a bit more there.
So just very briefly, for this specific study, for those of you who may not be familiar with it, anytime you discount back a typical drug, once it's been in the marketplace, any time savings has a huge value, incremental value. And any investment that you make will be so much smaller than the discounted net present value of the time savings. And for this study, in the absence of actual experience, we had to make certain assumptions using existing benchmark data. What is the savings in terms of time with the reduction of a single protocol amendment? The typical amendment adds about 3 months of unplanned time and about $500,000 in direct costs, unbudgeted costs. So you can imagine how that, the kind of impact that that would have. And we also used a convenient sample of a few trials, about three dozen trials, that had already deployed a DCT element, and that's where we came up with some of the time savings. Now we're looking to really build on that with a much more robust data set.
Excellent. Thank you for that. I think that puts excellent perspective onto some more of the context behind how we're measuring that. Shayna, I'm going to switch over to you. Looking at it from a perspective from Janssen, how do you have conversations around what makes best sense to implement into trials based upon the perceived upfront cost for some of the services associated to DCT, along with the projected value savings that you will find?
So it's definitely a challenging one, because as we talked about, people to make these decisions want to understand what those benefits are, you know, from a cost perspective and how we're going to shorten cycle times. Without that, it is that difficult conversation in terms of trying to look at what these potential benefits could be, and looking at, you know, where do we make the right investment in maybe that right patient population. So we're really starting to look and focus, and that's kind of the selling feature. Where have we seen some wins with DCT in certain patient populations or countries, and trying to focus on those and showing those successes versus trying to really look at it from more of a broader perspective. And even looking at it from not, you know, let's focus on a few countries and see how we do there where we think it might be more successful. Because what accessibility looks like, what DCT looks like in different countries is different everywhere. So it may not be actually as positive perspective on a DCT in one country versus another. So we're trying to help even narrow it down a little bit more so it's a bit more specific.
Excellent. Thank you. Anna, if I can switch over to you. As I mentioned in the beginning of this, I think we currently face a challenge as an industry of a lack of a robust data set that we're still trying to develop further to create insights. But within Genentech, how are you guys really leveraging some external consortia to be add-on data sets to inform your decisions?
Thanks so much, and hi everyone, good morning. Thanks for sticking it out for the entire last day, right? So at Genentech, we have been really lucky to be involved in some pre-competitive industry working groups like DTRA, or the Decentralized Trials Research Alliance, as well as the Tufts CSDD group. Very exciting work, such a really great opportunity to come together as an industry and just partner together to share data out and discuss the thought process behind what goes into defining success. So in middle of August, DTRA actually released their 10 business metrics around thinking about how to quantify return on your investment from an operational standpoint. And the reason I find this extremely exciting is that, so being kind of newer to the clinical trial research industry, like we all know what success is from a clinical standpoint. You prove your OS, your PFS, your oncology benefit compared to standard of care with a tolerable safety profile. But I don't think, and I would challenge this, I don't think we've ever thought about operational success. And now that we have all this new technology, innovative services to combine the way that we do the work, we should really be tracking that. Patient satisfaction is almost the third pillar of healthcare quality. There's emerging literature that shows that when you increase your patient satisfaction, they actually live longer and do better on therapy. So we should really benchmark that, because what you measure, you can actually improve on. If we don't measure it now as a group, we will never be able to demonstrate the impact we have on patients' lives beyond the molecule itself. And the other thing I will say is that in phase three trials, we always know that this proves efficacy, but there's always the payer, the doubt that you're not really proving real-world effectiveness. And I think with a broader inclusive population, flexible ways to do DCTs, involving the local HCPs, yes, your data gets dirtier and it's, you know, more complicated, but you're actually moving the needle to bridging the gap between efficacy and effectiveness research. And that was also a publication done by Dr. Brower and colleagues back in 2021. So I just think that's very exciting times, and we should really harness where we're at right now as leaders to grab the vision and also the process together so we can transform change.
Yeah, that's wonderful. I love the fact that you've mentioned patient feedback in that, right? Because it's so critical that we as an industry continue to collect the feedback, not only from our patients, but from our sites, as we've heard many times in the past, specifically from you, Hassan, earlier in the conference. So I wonder, can you tell us, Hassan, how are you guys at BMS really working to develop data sets, and how's that patient insight, that patient feedback, the site feedback, in order to iterate on your strategy of implementing either a decentralized modality, remote services, or some sort of technology platform in order to enable these types of ways of working?
Yeah, thanks. Brandon, for the question. It's an interesting time in the industry right now where it's the post-COVID correction, if I may call it this way, where during COVID, it was a tremendous amount of investment in digital approaches to save us from all the trials that were getting closed or getting slowed down, and everybody went to DCTs in general. And we, all different companies have different ways of doing it, and that spurred a lot of investment in the digital technology. And I think we all had a way to implement the digital technology. But where we are today is there's generally a slowdown, and there's an important question that's being asked from our leaders as to, is this really worth it? You know, sites are open, life is normal again, or at least there's a semblance of normalcy. And, you know, do we really need DCTs at the end of the day? And I think it's important to not throw the baby with the bathwater in that sense, because we went to decentralize our trials for a reason. There was real value at a certain time, and that value was not trivial. But how do we measure that value is now the real question. And I often say this, you probably heard it from many others as well, decentralized clinical trials are clinical trials. It's really important to remember that, because when we remember that, we know that the way we measure clinical trials today is probably the same way we should measure decentralized clinical trials. If a trial, a traditional trial, takes longer to complete, will a decentralized trial take shorter? I think we should not have a different measure for a DCT, except that the trial design is different. Decentralized trials, besides the technology, enable this decentralization, this flexibility in the way patients can participate. And so one metric that we focused on, which I think is really important, that will help us truly differentiate, and if there is true value in DCT today, it will help bring it up to the top so we can see the difference, is what we call degree of decentralization in our trials. So the way this works is, generally we design trial in a certain way, and then we come in and say, in these 15 visits that you have designed, maybe you can add or you can change 5 of those visits and make them flexible. So patients can go to the site if they want or can do it from home. So in this case, 5 visits out of 15, that's 33% decentralization. And as we take that metric and we measure it across all of our trials, we can then determine if that percent decentralization is positive, is favorable for the trial, or makes no difference. And that's how we can understand, is there true value in decentralization or not? It's really not about the technology. It's about making the trial faster, less burdensome for the patient, less burdensome for the site. It's the same measures that we have for traditional trials. The only difference is that we're introducing this degree of flexibility, and it's enabled by technology. So I think this is a critical metric that I'm hoping the industry can align on, and then in 2-3 years we can see presentations that say, if you decentralize in cardiovascular trials, you have higher chances of recruiting patients, you'll finish on average 6 months early or 3 months early, and you'll save, you know, $5 million, something that Tufts can probably do.
I just want to add to Hassan's comments. Yesterday, I was in a conversation, and someone very candidly said that our rush to deploy DCT during the pandemic has done a disservice to the technology and these solutions now that we're in the wake of the pandemic, right? That there was so much exuberance, there was so much excitement that we focused more on the technology and not on optimizing our clinical trials with newer solutions that could be deployed. So I think a lot of the metrics we need to gather now have to be gathered even more carefully, right, in order to address the critical issues that we know will most influence our decisions moving forward for our trials, and not center around a technology choice, for example. It's all about optimizing the studies, the value of the science, as well as the operational performance and quality of the research.
Excellent points. I think that that flexibility and the increase in access leads me to my next question. And Shane, I'm going to pass it over to you. Diversity, a key obligation that we as an industry need to focus on as per recent regulation being released. How are you guys looking at that? And is that a metric that you're actively tracking when you have a component of decentralization in your trial?
Well, in general, diversity is definitely something that broadly we are definitely tracking and looking at and having different strategies around that. But I guess DCT is definitely one that we see as an opportunity. Sometimes also it can also hinder as well. So I think you're looking at it, again, looking at really focused on those patient populations and what is needed. Because, yeah, it depends on that situation. But I definitely think diversity is an area we need to continue to focus on. Sorry.
Agreed. Anna, I'm gonna pass the same question over
to
you.
So I think diversity, of course, satisfaction, safety. So proving that when you're doing a DCT, you're not introducing more risk to the patient. So it's not more harmful to participate in a DCT element or a DCT fully decentralized trial. Compliance, kind of database quality. There's also your workforce optimization, which is interesting. So the group at DTRA, we came up with like 70 metrics, right? And we needed to keep it simple. So we consolidated that to 10. And the idea behind that workforce optimization, as you heard this morning, site burden and kind of burnout and all that, we really need to optimize how we ask our sites to do research. And so potentially with DCTs, you're introducing like a virtual workforce, or you're maximizing the different skill sets in different teams. So maybe one team is doing just the outreach and one team is doing just the regulatory submissions, right? So that's kind of one way that Genentech has done previously, is how do we work with what is already existing in the system, the health system, and what their skills are, so we can add to, we don't need to disrupt how they do work. It's kind of maximizing what they already know best. And so some sites may not be the best at recruitment, so then give that over to the other sub-I, the other hub, right? So in that way, you maximize the number of patients and the number of sites, and you increase that ratio of site a patient load per site. And the other thing I wanted to ask or add was speed as well. So DCTs can also increase your speed to database lock and your enrollment timelines and your rate of enrollment per month. So all these numbers are online if you want to look at it. And also, we have not purposefully released the methods of calculating each metric. It's just the idea, because we don't want to be too prescriptive early on to show how to calculate patient satisfaction or how to calculate your safety, right? It's just, we have a suggestion of tracking SAEs. We have a suggestion of using the Transcellery SPFQ, for example, or an NPS score. But I think that if you share those methods too early on, you're going to pigeonhole your approach. And so that's why the best way, I think, for us as a group, when we think about metrics, is to put those big buckets out and then share your methods on how you calculate each one, so that everyone as an industry can line up and do the same methods for that idea.
Just very quickly, that's been great, Anna. I wanted to mention that one of the major challenges that we face as an enterprise has been the realization that the amount of DCT deployments was so much lower than we expected, given all the exuberance and excitement. In fact, we have very few full examples of what we would consider now a reasonable deployment. Instead, we may see an element that was piloted, but it's very rare to see an organization that has actually started to extend the use of DCT elements in any kind of uniform way. And so that makes it even more difficult as we gather the metrics to aggregate them within a single company, so that we can make informed decisions based on the insights from the data. It just speaks to the need for these pre-competitive consortia like DTRA, like the working group study that we're doing, just to have enough volume of experience so we can now get it to the level that we've been describing at the patient subgroup or community subgroup level, by disease, by technology, we're so far away from being able to gather those insights and tie them to the outcome measures that we're looking for. We have a lot of work to do, but really that's the only way that we can achieve a level of empirical data that we can draw these insights.
So I think to what Hassan said earlier too, and looking at it from a how much DCT is in your trial, I think that the next question too is where we can start to look at success is when you put those in your trials of flexibility, how much are they adopted and where are they adopted and things like that. So then that I think is where we can first start, because we talk about patient satisfaction, right? If our patients are using it, then I think there's satisfaction, especially when there's a flexibility. So I think that's a first place to start in this big picture of how we can start to show, okay, if we're seeing in these patient populations high adoption rates, I think that's the first place we can go to start bringing people on board with us as well.
Yeah, that's excellent. So it kind of brings us to the innovation adoption curve and whether or not there is wide-scale adoption. But Ken, you raised a great point around we don't see very many full DCTs, right? And I think at the start of the pandemic, and not to anchor it to this, but we expected a lot more. Do we consider that to be an insight that has been generated in the sense that full DCT may not be fit for purpose 95% of the time? Majority of the time, we'll see that a hybrid model is actually the better approach to take, especially as it relates to measuring the value and what is preferred by not only patients, but sites.
So hindsight is 2020, and all of you, all of my my fellow panelists know full well that it's nearly impossible to have a disruptive innovation that we just simply embrace immediately, right? So the pandemic really created a kind of a one-time occurrence for a variety of reasons, and we've been talking about it, where all the stars aligned, and we were able to pilot a disruptive set of solutions, our DCT solutions. But in hindsight, we realized that we never could have expected that to resonate and be adopted widely. We knew just from our prior experience that it usually takes 6 to 8 years for a single company to move from pilot to full-scale adoption, and the metrics required to convince the organization and support the decision have to be very, very extensively gathered and evangelized in the organization. So it's interesting that none of us really saw that, but that is exactly where we are today. We realize that we're taking a huge step back, and now we have to gather the metrics we probably should have gathered years ago.
Absolutely. So leads me very nice into the next area that I'd like to pass to you, Hassan, with regards to your presentation around breakthrough innovation. And considering the length of an average study being years, how are you guys working to determine value, especially when the time scale is so long that it's difficult to pivot quickly?
Yeah, for those of you that did not attend my presentation, I talked about breakthrough versus incremental innovation. And to Ken's point, it takes about 6 to 8 years to fully adopt something in our industry. And there's a reason behind this. Number one, our trials take a long time. Especially oncology trials, and I know this because I'm in a company that focuses a lot on oncology. And anything that you do, you're piloting it today. And if you are lucky, you're piloting it at the beginning of the trial, and then you won't necessarily see all the results until the end of the trial. And sometimes you just pivot in the middle because there is potentially a need to change course for whatever reason. I think it's a fallacy to believe that we'll implement DCT or implement anything, and within 6 months, you know exactly that it's a winner. You will see trends, and you will see that maybe the first implementation will not work. The second one, you've learned something, you'll make it better, and it takes that amount of time. The problem that we have is because of the cost pressures, and because this is a competitive industry, and at the end of the day, we most of our companies are publicly traded and are accountable to the street, we ultimately want to show that we are profitable and that we are making money and bringing value. And ultimately, when that happens, that's when sometimes the hatchet drops and a program that you invested so much in is pulled out and you've developed some learnings, but maybe you have not generated real measurable value right away. And that's how innovation in our industry functions. You can't just expect to implement something and suddenly you're flying to the moon. It just really takes a long time. And I think it's the same thing with DCT. No one here can say that DCT was not valuable. In that two-year period where we had COVID, DCT was a real lifesaver, or some of the elements of DCT. But to Ken's point, we couldn't be perfect at implementing DCT from day one. And there was a lot of lessons learned. There's a lot of times where we tripped and fell, and DCT didn't really work. We made some assumptions thinking that everyone, every patient will just adopt DCT and want to do telemedicine visit, but that's not true. And so I think all of these learnings get us, and frankly, the term full DCT, I think, I really think has a flaw, because every DCT is a hybrid, in my opinion. That's why we introduced this percent DCT measure, because people think DCT, and if they think 100% DCT, that doesn't exist, especially in registrational clinical trials. You have to have some element where patients go to the clinic. Full DCT almost never happens. So when we say DCT, 99.9% we're talking about a hybrid. So I don't know why we differentiate full versus hybrid, because it's always hybrid.
Great points. I think that, yes, measuring the number of or percentage of decentralization is an interesting idea. And maybe we should just reframe it as like flexibility, because that makes more sense to a lot of people that don't know what DCTs are, don't understand what decentralizing what. Because to patients, you're actually centralizing the way that they are in the trial. It's easier for them. They don't need to go far out to participate in activities, right? So it's decentralized to us because we understand the hub and spoke model of how it traditionally looks like. So maybe just to our own stakeholders, pitching it as a different angle would be more beneficial for getting buy-in. Other thing I was going to add was sharing early metrics. So I think this year is great because last year it was more aspirational. This year I'm seeing more of my colleagues present their early findings. There was a sponsor last week at a different conference I was at who showed that they actually had a registrational phase 2 study for MDD, and then they had a hybrid arm that basically was the same thing, the same design, but any patient that didn't enroll in that registrational arm that was too burdensome to participate would just fold into that DCT approach. So it's the same mirror design, very brilliant design, that you're able to show your broader reach, and then they actually presented those data at the conference, and I think they're presenting later on this year. Anyway, and then Genentech, if you were yesterday's talk with Kim Barnhold, she talked about Katori, which is a hybrid DCT that actually originally was not supposed to be a hybrid DCT, but it transformed into it because of a need. And we learned that we measure the geography of the different zip codes from the patients in the virtual approach versus the brick and mortar approach. So much difference. There was, I think it was like 2,000 miles or something versus much less for the brick and mortar approach. And then also the PI had to move different states. That wasn't really planned, but she was able to move different states without disrupting the continuity of research because of the virtual approach. So I think that is super powerful. We should continue to share our own individual ways of running trials and how they turn into, out of necessity, a flexible approach.
Love it. So I think, you know, one of the things that some of you may have heard from previous discussions was separating the measure from the molecule. And I think that that is a space that we as an industry really need to leverage in order to share insights, share data in a non-competitive space so that we can drive progress together. With the final minute and a half, I'd love to just go around and what are your final insights, anything that you'd like to share, a call of action? Shane, I'll start with you.
And I think you kind of touched on this a little bit already, but I do think we need to come together and come up, you know, I think with DTRA there are some common terminology and things like that, and we've got the metrics, but how do we start to bring this data together and really work together to help show the value of DCT?
And I'm just going to shamelessly plug our efforts to, as part of a pre-competitive collaboration for as many organizations as possible to share their data. We'll aggregate it and make sure that we can then share the output with all of you. So we're all working together to gather some really meaningful and insightful metrics.
Get involved and share how you calculated your methods.
Very quickly, I remember when I was at BI, we were implementing a DCT, and our study team was getting nervous because we had like 4 months left before launch, and some things were still not working. Our technology vendor, when he heard that, he said, 4 months is an eternity. There's a clear gap in thinking between tech and clinical. So I predicted 10 years ago that it'll be until 2030 that DCT will truly be fully adopted. I think we're still going to get to 2030. A lot of people thought it's too long, but just stay calm. We're going to get there, but we're not there yet.
Thank you all for sharing your thoughts, and thank you all for joining us today. Wishing you a successful rest of the conference.
We hope you enjoyed this podcast. For more information on the DPharm conference, editorial, podcasts, or webcasts, you can visit dpharmconference.com or theconferenceforum.org. Thank you for listening.